sea is empty to the night. And I said, now hey, 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 what do you see? I'm going down to sail on an empty sea. Well, I said, hey, 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 what do you know? I'm gonna cross that empty ocean to the other shore. It's growing darker, the moon's almost gone. Though I'm asleep, I see all that's going on. Travel and travel, don't dare look back. The ocean behind me is waning to black. I stare straight ahead and sail forever on. I know by the dawn that the sea will be gone. I said, hey, 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 what do you see? I'm going down to sail on an empty sea. Well, I said, hey, 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 what do you know? I'm gonna cross that empty ocean to the other shore. The moon's almost gone. Though I'm asleep, I see all that's going on. I travel and travel, don't dare look back. The ocean behind me is waning to black. Stare straight ahead and sail forever on. I know by the dawn that the sea will be gone. Said now, hey, 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 what do you see? I'm going down to sail on an empty sea. Well, I said, hey, 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 what do you know? I'm going across that empty ocean to the other shore.
Lewis Tillett there with Sailor's Dream from the album The Ugly Truth, released in 1993. And today we continue the fascinating and often disturbing musical journey of Lewis Tillett, and he joins me now. Welcome, Lewis.
Thank you so much, Irene. Always a pleasure.
And now, The Ugly Truth is your fourth album, and this particular, well, it's not your fourth album, but it's the fourth album under the heading of Lewis Tillett.
After leaving the band format.
That's right, yeah. And this particular album was a collaboration between yourself and longtime bandmate Charlie Owen, one of Australia's most expressive and lyrical guitarists. So tell us about that collaboration.
Well, it was really push had come to shove as far as how I felt about playing music in Australia. It was just, things were getting worse. My frustration was getting worse. It was, in those days, you know, publicans were musicians' mortal enemies, never the two shall meet, and there's nothing, but everywhere I looked, there seemed to be contempt, animosity, everyone stabbing each other in the back, and all over nothing. And I was getting more and more despondent, yet each trip I'd done to Europe, the opposite was a reaction. As I think I might have said in earlier at some stage, that often the venues don't even have a bar and people go there to listen to the music. So my record label, Normal Records in Bonn in Germany, it had started a mail order only section of their label called Return to Sender. And what they had done is they asked a number of their different artists to just compile either outtakes or just interesting odds and ends, acoustic reinterpretations of songs. So that they weren't new studio albums as such, but they specifically, you know, sort of kept the price right down, and they were a little bit of a way of getting, because the fans are extremely loyal and interested in Europe, and this series, Return to Sender, was a way of presenting the artist without the barrier of a studio and overproduction. And so I was asked to do it on my own, and Charlie hadn't been doing a lot overseas at that stage, and we'd been playing a lot together here in Australia, and we'd really started to develop a sound. That was yet another project which continued on for another few albums. And whereas I'd grown tired of the idea of a band concept, Charlie was very much in the same state of mind. And then what we just wanted to try and experiment to see if we could get just two people and have the depth and power of a full band, and this was our first foray into that experiment.
Right, okay. Well, it's a really good album. There's some great tracks on there. Well, first, before I get to the rest of the album, what about the title, The Ugly Truth?
The titles have all got many layers on them. One of them, The Ugly Truth, is simply those songs are the way they are. They're played pretty much live. Obviously, there was some overdubbing, like you on that last song. There's piano and Hammond organ. I didn't play them at the same time, but they were pretty much one takes. And The Ugly Truth, there was no marketing behind it. If you were interested, you'd had to find out from the record label that it was even about. And The Ugly Truth was also a reflection of the so much of the high rotation, high sales recordings are really smoke and mirrors job, and we thought, let's present an album as The Ugly Truth in all its warts and all, and actually try and go purely on emotion. And in fact, when we used to play live, one of our ambitions was to have at the end of the concert dead silence, nobody applause, to have taken people to another place, so that to start clapping would seem appropriate. We actually achieved that.
Right, okay. Now, this album consists of 11 tracks, and five of which were on previous albums: A Cast of Aspersions, 1990, and Ego Tripping at the Gates of Hell, 1987.
Yes, and again, the reason for that was to revisit a lot of songs that we felt had, I felt had been again hammered out in the studio. Also, a way of letting the songs breathe more and more. It was never meant to be a new major release. And when anyone records a song, I think very few people could say that they're happy with it the first time it is. That to a certain extent, you've got to live with it. And I'm not saying that I don't like the earlier versions. It was another way of approaching the song. So rather than write a whole new bunch of songs. It was a message that there's a lot more to music than one song played in a certain sort of way that has a shelf life of X number of months and then it's out the window. Not at all. The songs can be played in a multitude of ways, and they should be engaging enough, and they should, you know, tap into those universal themes that they that their shelf life is eternity, really.
Yes. Well, the previous albums only had 8 tracks anyway, so with 11 tracks on this album, I mean, it was a good opportunity and a bonus for those purchasing the album.
Yeah, and once again, to be able to, by recording them very quickly and put that amount of material on it, gave the opportunity for the audience to get to know me from a musical perspective a little more intimately than a voice with a great sort of sound in and around it.
Yes. Now, over the last few weeks, we've discussed your reoccurring childhood nightmares that were sadly never addressed at the time, and your teenage years, but one of your toughest years dealing with your mental health issues was 1992, although you still managed to produce a brilliant album in Letters to a Dream, which we talked about last week. So with 1992 behind you, how were things shaping up for 1993?
To be totally honest, things were dreadful and they got worse.
Oh, dear.
And they continued to get worse and worse and worse, much to the point where the only thing that would keep me going was that when the next thing would go worse, I would just have to laugh. I say, because it cannot be possible that something could be more dreadful than that experience, and then there it is again. And
in which way might I? I mean, for example,
They were invisible, a lot of invisible demons, but certainly immense frustration with the world around me. I remember it's funny. I should sort of what do they put out? Sort of disclaimers or warnings before
yes,
someone says something
yes.
on radio. I say sort of no curses attached to this particular comment or this particular program. But I remember seeing a psychologist at one stage when I was a long-term inpatient, and was the first psychologist I'd spent time. I was able to speak to her 5 days a week, and at the very beginning of it, she said, "I've noticed that as many years as you've been coming in here, you never talk about music. We all know you're a musician, and that music is really the most significant part of your life, and it would." Looking at how dreadful everything else is, it would seem to be the one thing that keeps you going, yet you never talk about it. And I said, if I was to tell my entire story, I said, it seems to basically end up killing the person, quite literally, physically killing them. I mean, you've got to remember, I was in a mental institution.
Mm.
Yet I wasn't under some sort of delusion that it was cursed, but I was... The people around me were starting to drop like flies. I threw away my phone book at that time because it became like a roll call of the dead. And if I was to manage to bring someone up, they're either dead in the terminal ward or they're doing okay, but within 6 months they'd be dead. Anyway, and the only common factor... that seemed to be running through all of these totally independent scenarios, situations, people and themes was me. So that was the point of my conversations with the psychologist, and she says, well, you know that makes no sense. You are not cursed, Lewis. You are not putting cursing influences on other people's lives. And I said, I know that, but I said, let's try and work this out from a purely rational point of view. I am the only common theme. What am I doing wrong? And she described that it is the life that I lived in the negative side, the music business world, said was like converging hot, warm currents of water in the ocean, which basically becomes a feeding ground of sharks. It doesn't mean the whole ocean is a dreadful place, but you seem to live in a feeding ground of sharks. And And to me, my response was, it's not so much a feeding ground of sharks, it's more in the turgid swamps of bottom feeders and parasites. And I remember her asking me one day after, she said, how did you sleep last night? And I said, very morbid. And I said, then she said, well, how morbid is morbid? I said, well, I wrote my epitaph. And she said, well, what was it? And I said, here lie the mortal remains of Lewis Tillett, died childless and a bachelor, wished his father had done the same. And she said, yeah, well, that's pretty morbid. And we talked about that for a while. Anyway, I owe a real lot to her, that of her convincing me that despite what would appear as a logical progression of events, that I was the core conduit for all this dreadful stuff happening, that it wasn't my responsibility. And anyway, I left the hospital and went back to see how she was going about 3 months later, and she was dead. And, you know, she was only in the late 30s. So, but the gift that she gave me is that I didn't feel that I'd caused that in any way. To me, it was just, I was able to take it as a purely rational thing. People in this world die. We all die.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And
yeah.
So she left me with a wonderful gift.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah, things were bad. And so how did you manage to make this music? If it wasn't for the music, I don't think I'd be here today. Support from any of the mainstream music? No, quite the opposite. Outright hostility and rejection, but a phenomenal amount of love from the most obscure places. And again, no matter how dark I was, and I mean, hell is too light a word for it. And it was 24 hours a day. And there are countless stories of people who would tell me, look, just hearing you and seeing you, you turn up there on stage, we don't know how you do it. But that's all I could do for you know, that small period, whether it be an hour, 2-3 hours a week or a day, and then go back into my hole. But I always refuse to believe that the world is completely black and that there is not hope. You know, where the sun's rising, where the sun's setting somewhere, it's rising somewhere else. And it may not be rising in my part of the world, but for someone else it's rising, so that's good enough. And that's what I tried to hang on to, and that's why the music is often considered dark and somber, but it's also very hopeful and I think comforting.
Yes. All right, well, I might let you take a little bit of a breather, and I'll just play a little bit of a track called The Rational One from your album. It's just a very short instrumental, so
yeah.
You can have a little bit of a breather. Okay, so we're talking to Lewis Tillett about his musical journey, and The Ugly Truth is the name of the album. So things were pretty bad, Lewis, pretty bad indeed. So what did you do about that next?
I basically went to where the love was, which was overseas. And always my record label over there would find some way, you know, whether it be a loan that they could dig up on their credit card for an airfare or whatever and get me over there, and I could play to people and to playing to people who would listen in sort of awe-struck silence was really a wonderful feeling. And that you know, again, we talked about it previously, the so-called glory days of Australia's pub rock. There's nothing glorious about it. And but over there, music with passion, feeling, and as a vehicle to take one to another space and another area of in the cosmos or a mental area was that's why people went to concerts and I was able to feed off that, and that gave what was only a theory that there's hope in the world to proof. So I continued to perform more and more in Europe. This record, pretty much with a few import versions after Letters to a Dream, nothing really got released in Australia.
Right.
One album did, actually, but we'll get to that one later.
Yes, okay.
But after them all, no, and in Australia, no one had an interest in what I was doing overseas. In Europe, they thought I was some superstar in Australia, and it was quite funny. I'd often be playing in some really crummy little bar somewhere, and there'd be someone from France, from Germany, the Netherlands, whatever, and these were, by this stage, camera phones and digital phones would come in, and that they would be filming it and to their friends back in Europe, and you say, you would not believe what I'm seeing at the moment, and you would not believe the environment. I'm seeing Lewis Tillett, and he's playing in a toilet. And we're so lucky. It must be a one-off, you know.
Yeah.
And so, no, it's not a one-off.
If only
that's
they
the
knew.
Way it is.
Yeah. All right, we're nearly out of time again. But is there anything else you want to add to... Because I think the next album, now, correct me if I'm wrong, 1995, Midnight Rain?
Yes.
Okay, so that'll be next week.
Yes, yeah. And that was a continuation of this series, but it also elaborated because it came out as a major release, and this actual album, The Ugly Truth, became a bonus CD for Midnight Rain. But the message that, or the comment that I'd like to make in parting is that, you know, the as we know, there's many episodes of this series, to not go into how black it was would be serving a great injustice. I don't revel in it. I don't enjoy talking about negativity. I don't enjoy talking about the darkness. But if it wasn't for the darkness, the light wouldn't be so beautiful.
Yes, that's right. And we here, me especially anyway, really appreciate your generosity in being that open.
Yes, and well, to me, I've no interest in being a fraudster. I even feel like a fraudster most of the time when I'm playing, because I feel I'm not giving enough. And to me, the music only gets there when I'm not there, and it's a big never-ending cliche, and there's nothing wrong with that. But one becomes a conduit to the infinite source of where music comes from.
Well, I've seen you perform, Lewis, and I can assure you, you give enough. You definitely give 200%.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you once again, and look forward to next week.
And so do I.
It's
always a great pleasure. Thanks,
and
Aaron.
I'm going to play my favourite track from the album now, and believe it or not, it is actually The Ugly Truth. This is just brilliant. It's an instrumental.
Yes, and a lot of these instrumentals were great exercises in... Yeah, I'll keep this brief. A lot of musicians who play in bands do not... The first thing to listen to learn if you're going to play music is to listen. Don't make a noise until you've listened first, and eye contact. And these songs we play, they do not follow. There's no click track. There's no timing. It's Charlie and I do not even make eye contact. Only if it comes to an important cue where we're not sure where we are, we both try and tap into this other place. So this song, you'll notice, a complete lack of timing, yet a synchronicity that I think is very strong.
Okay. The Ugly Truths, Lewis Tillett. The Ugly Truth there from the album The Ugly Truth, Lewis Tillett.